One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Just go to RyanSickler.com. That's where you can find everything, my social media. Follow me there. All my stand-up dates, go check that out. Sign up for the email newsletter. Also, thehoneydewpodcast.com is the website for this. It's all there. Just go there. Merch, all that stuff's there. I'm really excited for today's guest. You know, I say all the time we're highlighting the lowlights, and I ask people to come on and send me just a log line of their stories. And the list I got for this just, I mean, unfortunately made me laugh out loud. I'm really excited to get into it. So without saying another word, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joe List to The Honeydew.
Do I clap too? I'm clapping.
You should clap for yourself, right? God damn it. Yes.
These guys
are clappers. We're going to clap you in.
It feels better to join and clap in than just stand here and be like, that's right.
Well, I'm very excited to have you here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Will you please, before we get into anything, promote everything you'd like?
All right. I have a podcast called Tuesdays with Stories. It's a comedy podcast. And by the time this comes out, I have a new podcast that might be out called, I'm calling it Mindful Metal Jacket, and it's all about anxiety and mindfulness and trying to not kill yourself. So I've recorded a bunch of those. It's like one-on-one, probably similar to this, I think. And so that should be out right now by the time you're listening to this. And comedianjoelist.com has all my dates and stuff. And then it's Joe List Comedy on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome.
I couldn't get Joe List Comedy website for some reason. I don't know why.
Who's got Joe List Comedy?
I might have had it myself, and I couldn't get it from my younger self. I don't really know, actually. I don't know how that happened, but
parked on that shit.
Yeah, well, I think I had a shitty website that I couldn't get rid of or something. Mm-hmm. It's very weird. It's like when an artist leaves a band and then the record company sues him for stealing. John Fogerty, specifically. Yeah. I think that only happened once. I don't know why I'm saying it. Like, it's like a thing that happens a lot, but anyways, I like having the guys laughing out there. It's nice.
They're big fans. We're all big fans.
I appreciate that.
We're all big fans. So, like I said, you sent a list, and we have a lot to get into, which I'm very excited to talk to you about. So, you're originally from Massachusetts. We were talking earlier.
Yeah.
And just at an early age, you started having panic attacks.
Yeah, well,
when would you say, and why do you think they happen, or do you know they happen?
Well, now, I mean, I'm having, like, I didn't have, like, the full panic attack. It was just always constant, pretty severe anxiety. And then, like, when I was young, and I'm getting to the bottom of why now through therapy, which is really exciting.
I'm in it, doing the same.
Yeah, I love it. And I think it's like it's a lot of stuff not getting what you needed from your parents exactly. I'm so afraid they're going to listen to this and, you know, hit me or whatever. But
still, don't worry about it.
But and then in like high school, I ran cross country and track. So I was running like 7, 8, 9 miles a day. And so that was like my least anxious time, which you think I would run 7 or 8 miles a day now knowing that. But
can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Have you done EMDR?
No, I don't know what that is. Is that a sex position?
It sounds like it. And it probably is somewhere. But Dr. Drew recommended it to me, and it is a therapy that it's the alternating buzzing in your hands or eye movement or whatever. And it's so, when you said you ran cross country, I was curious if you said that was, you did nothing. It didn't bother you. Anything bother you?
No, I mean, I felt a little bit, but I felt a lot better.
Right.
Because I was getting that energy out, I think.
And I used to think the same thing. It's part of that for sure, like hiking, and I would be out in the sun. I thought, oh, you know, I'm out there exercising, doing good to myself. And a big part of EMDR is the alternating patterns.
Interesting.
And the way it was explained to me, and I fuck up a lot, but I believe the lady who pioneered this, I believe during it she got breast cancer and she would run a lot. And the only time she didn't think was running. And she figured out that the alternating pattern doesn't allow your brain in the frontal lobe just to sit on that.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And focus on it. So I'm saying if you're really looking for it, it helped me out so much. And there's an end to it. It's not an ongoing year after year therapy. You will find the answer. Some people get there quicker than others, but you will find that answer.
Oh, I'm all ears. I love this kind of stuff. This is what I'm interested in. I just started doing yesterday this Wim Hof breathing. Do you know about this guy?
No.
Wim Hof is like a guy.
I love all this shit.
He's a guy. He's Austrian or Dutch. Maybe he's Dutch. I don't know. He's European. But he's a guy that like hiked Mount Kilimanjaro with like just shorts on. And he went up Everest with shorts on, and he like does these ice baths, and he does this certain kind of breathing. He's been on like Rogan, I guess, and Russell Brand's podcast. And someone was like, because I have chronic reflux, and this guy was like, you've got to try Wim Hof breathing. And I've done it 2 days in a row. I still feel exactly the same, but I'm, like, I'm hoping it'll get somewhere. Yeah. And then he talks about cold showers. So I'm taking cold showers and breathing like a lunatic.
Cold showers.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm interested in ED. What is it? BDSM?
It's BDSM. Ask for that. Yeah. It's covered by your insurance.
EDMR.
See, I used to mess it up too because EDM, that electronic dance music, it's not that. It's EMDR.
EMDR. Yes. Okay. I'm going to try this.
Try it out.
All right.
So back to cross country running. Sorry.
Sorry. So that, I think that helped me a lot. Then like after high school, I was going to be a comedian. I was a comedian. I started right after high school. But you know, I'm just doing open mics, and that's when I started drinking, and my girlfriend went to college like a normal person, and I just was like staying at my parents' house, sleeping until 4 o'clock in the morning, boozing, and that's when like my anxiety really started to like come in. This thing of like, I'm not doing enough, I'm a piece of shit, I hate myself. And
but were
like,
you getting that from your parents as well, or any outside people putting that on you, or were you just feeling that yourself?
I think probably just myself. My parents were pretty supportive. Like, they would come to shows and stuff, and they were like, okay, yeah, you're going to be a comedian.
And all through school, whatever you did, they were supportive in there? And
yeah, supportive.
Your parents were together as well?
Yeah, my parents have always been together. But looking back now, there's certain things that like maybe I wasn't getting that I wish I was getting. Like, they were just kind of like, okay, great. And they would come to shows, but never after the show be like, that was amazing. You're unbelievable. We died laughing. It was great, which I still have that issue now. They'll come to shows and then kind of not say much. Or I'll do like the Tonight Show or whatever, and I don't hear from them for like days. And my mom's like, I just didn't want to bother you. I figured you were whatever. And so there's like that thing of like, you want that like, oh my God, you're incredible. We love you.
Yeah, well, my mom came up to me after a show with Tom Segura and told me how funny Tom was.
Yeah, I get that. I get that a lot, too.
That's what she said.
Yeah, I'll get stuff like that, too, where you're like, okay.
I was like, I'll tell him. Thanks.
Yeah,
I'll
thank you. Him. I appreciate it. I know him, so I'll know. Yeah. No, I did a thing that was like, this is like, I did the Tonight Show, and I took like the, what do you call it, cue card.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it like framed and matted.
Cool, yeah.
And then I gave it to my mother of like, check it out.
Look at this.
And I came back to the house like 4 months later, and it was like on the, leaning against the wall behind a chair. Like they hadn't hung it up yet. And I was just like,
it's my dust pan.
What? It was Tonight Show cue card.
It was great. Like it was like, realistically, I think it was like 7 months. My mother now, in her defense, has like OCD, so she wanted to match it with the thing or whatever. And my mother's a good person. I don't want to just trash my mother here. But it's stuff like that. Like, she, in her mind, she's just like, great, I'll hang it, but I don't want it to look different. But I'm like, can you just slap it up somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere.
Just be like, wow. And I had to be like, I might take that back if that's okay. And it was crazy.
Think about it. You should. Yeah.
And it wasn't just leaning against the wall. It was literally behind a chair. Like, it was just like, yeah, stick this back there. I'm like, dude, that's like
in
my...
In case somebody kind of knows, is like, what's that back there?
Yeah.
That's Joe's Tonight Show.
My son's dream came true.
My son's dream came true.
like, yeah, so that, like, stuff like that, you're like, jeez.
Chair. My son's dream came true. God damn. That is just, your heart just sinks. You're like, that's all right.
Yeah, there's like little things. And sometimes it takes a therapist to like tell you, like, that's really sad. And
I'm
like,
yeah.
Well, right. A lot of times I'll laugh. I'll be in therapy just laughing. He's like, why are you laughing, dude? Like, he gets like upset with me. He's like, I don't understand why you're laughing. And I'm like, I don't know. It's crazy.
It's how we process.
Exactly. I'm like, that's what I have to laugh, or else I'll just be sobbing. And I don't want to be a big bitch in here, you know?
The person I went to see, this therapist, she was great. She's like, that is it. Like, laughing at it is, it's the best thing you can do.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
You got to sob a little bit.
Yeah. I try to, like, I never asserted myself my whole life. I just kind of, like, my thing is, I always talk to someone else about whatever is bothering me, which just doesn't actually resolve anything. It just makes you angry and carry resentments, which then those build up and become anxiety. And that's like, I think so much of anxiety is just not ever like confronting anybody or saying anything or standing up for yourself,
and
you
just holding it all in and
go fuck, and then you're losing it. So I started having these panic attacks early 20s. And
what sort of things would happen to you when you had panic attacks?
I would start to like shift. It would always start with shaking. And I've had these recently too. I've had like bouts with it where I'll have it for like a month almost daily, and then it'll go away for a while. But it first started in my early 20s, and I would start shaking, and then it would like, I felt like my throat was closing or chest pain or like just this impending doom. And then it would like tunnel vision down where I couldn't see anything. And like, I would be like, on the ground, shaking.
What?
Like,
on the ground?
Yeah, like I couldn't stand. I'd lose my mind and like be like hyperventilating. I can't breathe. And then last about 15 or 20 minutes. And then I'd slowly like get to a point where it was so bad that like they couldn't get work. And I'd kind of start coming back down and slowly and shake. And it was crazy. And I remember like having them right before shows and during shows, in the middle of shows. It's pretty wild.
Did you ever have one where your parents saw it or anything at home then?
Yeah. Like they would.
I would think, as a parent, I would think my child's having a seizure.
Right.
I wouldn't know what's going on.
That's what I thought at first when I first started having them.
At least your eye level down there with your fucking Tonight Show. You got a great view down there on the floor. Oh, there
I
it
can
is.
Read it. I'm like, oh.
Under the chair.
maybe that's why I was having them. I was going to get down on the ground like a fucking maniac. But yeah, so like I started having, early on, I didn't know about panic disorder or anxiety attacks.
Yeah.
I just thought I was dying or having these seizures. And I remember going to the hospital and like, they know, like, first of all, I'm 21, like I'm like healthy. And I remember them taking like my heart rate and just being like, like flipping out. And the lady's like, you gotta relax. Like, you're fine. And being like, no, I'm not. And then like, but they have to, like, the problem with doctors and hospitals is they have to make sure you're not dying, because they don't want to be like, you're stressed.
Right.
And then you fucking have a massive coronary. So that you got to get checked for all this stuff. So while you're getting checked for the stuff, that feeds into all the anxiety, like having MRIs and all this shit. And then the worst, this is like classic my parents. Finally, they were like, yeah, you have panic disorder. You're having panic attacks. And my dad was like, yeah, I've had those. My brother has, my father has them all the time. And I'm like, what are you fucking kidding? Like, this has been going on for like a month.
Right.
He's like, yeah. My dad used to have them. And I'm like, why didn't you say that the first day? That would have been like, okay, this is something we have.
Yeah.
But then they went away for a long, I went to therapy. And so much of like therapy to me is them just being like, yeah, that's called panic disorder. You're having panic attacks. And once you know there's like a label, you're like, okay, so this is something people have had before. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like, I always felt like, something's happening to me that's never happened. I have Joe List's disease, you know. Like, this has never been.
You got your own goddamn
disease. This has never happened to anybody ever.
Patient 001.
But that's like so much of like, that's what like AA is and therapy is. It's just being like, yeah, people have had that.
Right.
Like I was just asking Josh if like, I'm like, you ever shit and there's oil? Like, I'm like.
Oil.
And it just takes one person to be like, yeah. I'm like, okay, good. As long as you've had it, I'm fine. Yeah. But I do have globs of oil in the toilet, which seems bad.
You should go get that checked out.
Oh, don't say that.
You should definitely get that checked
out. Oh, God.
Especially if it's dark. It could be blood. That's why I asked you if it was black when you were talking about
it. No, it's green. Well, it's like I have green oil.
You should definitely.
Dripping out of my asshole.
Listen, you should definitely get that looked at.
Well, by the time you see this, I might be dead, but.
You might be.
I was texting with a guy, a doctor, Dr. Steve, and he's like, it's too many nuts. You got to eat less fat. Don't say it. I'll fucking have a panic attack right here.
That's the best, though. It might just be that.
I think it's a lot of nuts.
You're
did some Googling.
Way too many nuts.
I eat too many nuts.
Oh, shit. My God.
Oh, God.
Okay, so you start to identify. Now you're right. A big part of therapy is like you're not crazy or abnormal. This is called this, and
right.
Millions of people suffer from it.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I like, those numbers. The bigger the number, the better you feel. Okay, 350 million people have this. I'm like, great.
All right.
Oil in the shit, that's 20 guys have that. I'm like, that seems low. That's a problem. I want to see six figures.
Yeah, six figures.
275,000 people have this a year.
Okay, I'm good.
That's not bad. But yeah, so that went on. And then they went away after like therapy. And then like it's kind of a thing that never goes away. I always joke, I have all things that never go away. Alcoholism, herpes, panic disorder. I have three things that are like, you have that for life. You just got to manage. So I'm like, can I get a thing that goes away?
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? They're all like, yeah, those are chronic. I'm like, fuck.
Oh my God.
So I'm doing a lot of managing. I'm managing all these things.
They are forever. Oh, my God. Look, I can't help you with the herpes, but I might be able to help you with these panic disorders.
I appreciate it. Well, I'm going to try ED.
I'm just passing along. I'll give you all the info. I'm passing along the information that was given.
That's EMDR.
All. Yes.
Right? I'm going to look that up. Yeah. It's like the moment I'm done with this.
I'm telling you. All right. Well, then you're having... So do you start drinking? You say alcoholism. At what age do you start drinking? And are you drinking because you're trying to cope with these panic attacks? Or what else is going on?
I think so. Well, I think I'm like... I started drinking a little, to me, late. Like, I was like 19. I never drank through high school because my family's all heavy drinkers. So I was like, you guys are doing that thing. I'm going to be a little different or whatever. And then I didn't drink through high school. My friends would drink, but I was like, you know, I was like nervous about that. Or I was like, I always say, like, I'm an athlete, not an alcoholic, because I was like, I'm not going to be one of these drinky guys. And then eventually, like, when I was like 19 or so, I had like...
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now. Now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
My first drink, and like so many people, everything made sense. So I was like, this is the best I've ever felt in my life. Because I have like social anxiety and all this shit. And you start to be like, I get it now. And then like anything else, well, for me anyways, I'll start like, let me see how far I can take this. Let me do shots and then more shots and then booze. And then before you know it, I'm like hammered every night and then started blacking out and stuff. But looking back now is like, yeah, it was some kind of like discontent. Mint, if that's a word, discontentment.
I'm going to go with that.
Is that something?
I wouldn't challenge you in Scrabble.
All right, I appreciate that. It sounds like something.
It does sound like something to me.
And I'm expressing an idea that you get.
I'm,
so that's all language is.
It was conveyed.
It was conveyed. Also a great word. But anyways, yeah, so I was like some kind of discontent or anxiety or like longing to feel like I belong or something. And that was a lot of bonding in my family too. It was like, you're drinking, I'm drinking, we're getting drunk, fucking woo.
And panicking about shit.
That
also runs in the family.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. Is like,
are you an only child?
No, I have an older sister.
Does she have suffer from the same?
She, I don't know that she has panic attacks, but she has anxiety. Everyone in my family has real severe anxiety. My mother and my therapist is like, it's all learned behavior. That's how you learned how to communicate. And also, like, that's like when I'm having great conversations with my family is when something's going wrong. I'm in there like being like, I got oil in my shit. Crazy. There's like black dot, and then like maybe it's this.
Let me get
like,
into this.
Mix. That's when we get really in. And it's like those conversations are better than conversations about stand up. Like I'm like literally like I did the Tonight Show. They're like, that's great.
That's
all right.
Great.
Showed and then I'm like, I
fucking...
shit blood. They're like, okay, great. Get in here. Like,
everybody, come on.
Yeah, we got to figure out what's
shit
going
blood.
On.
It sounds like too many nuts.
Yeah, it's like That's more of a topic than...
That's interesting. Yeah. That's really interesting.
But that's how, like, my family relates, is with, like, drama or anxiety of, like, wow, okay, we got to figure out how to solve this. And it's taking its toll.
It's obviously interesting. I see it in other families that the only real times they're communicating with one another is drama.
Right.
There's something going on with this one or that one or whatever. And then I have two brothers. I have cousins. We all still talk. But if I don't hear from them for a couple weeks, I know it's because nothing's wrong.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? And I've grown to appreciate, because I used to be like, yeah, you're not calling. And I used to think, oh my God, you're not calling because there's not any fucking drama going on. We're not sorting shit out.
Right.
Yeah. That's a real good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. But it's weird because it's like, that becomes the only way you connect is through right. things. So then what happens is I start creating. Now I'm a hypochondriac. I start creating things because that's how I get the most attention. It's fucked up. And then I try to do it in my relationship with my wife, and she's like a completely different kind of person than my mother. She's like, what? Shut up. I hate this. She's like, what are you talking about?
Shut up.
Cancer, you fucking idiot. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You're supposed to be like, oh, you know. And so I'm trying to navigate. I have to call my mother with bad shits and just talk to my wife about, you know, the hills or whatever she watches.
The hills.
Whatever the shows are, I don't know. I just sound like I'm 80 years old. Whatever show these kids are watching.
So at what point do you realize or acknowledge you're an alcoholic?
How old? Pretty early on, but I was always, I mean, I'm a comic and I was a Boston comic, so everyone's a fucking alcoholic. And so, like, I was always around heavy drinkers. So for a year, like, right away, I was like, I'm drinking in a way you're not supposed to be drinking. But I was 21, 22, and most people binge drink at that time. So you're like, well, everyone seems to be getting drunk, college, frats, bullshit, whatever. And then all my friends were older than me and also just as bad or worse. And then it becomes like, well, they're married and drinking like this. I don't even, so you do a lot of, like,
Justifying,
yeah. And then it was like, mid to late 20s or whatever, probably, where I was like I said, I knew I was a heavy drinker. I knew I was drinking more than you're supposed to drink and more often. And then there's stuff where you start like drinking in the morning, drinking by yourself, like all that shit, like blacking out. And you're like, well, this seems weird. No one else is coming to the movie theater with a bunch of booze in their pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one else is drinking, you know, doing shots at the whatever it is, birthday party. You're like, that's probably a little much. So I definitely felt like I can't sustain like this. Eventually, I'm going to have to quit. For like most of the time I was drinking, I'm like, eventually I'll have to stop. This is a lot. Yeah.
And what were you like as an alcoholic?
You
are still an alcoholic. You say it never goes away. So what were you like when you were drinking?
I was like kind of manic. I'd be like a lot of like, this is the best night ever. Come on, God, isn't this crazy? We're all together. This is awesome. And then like a half hour later, I'd be like, you guys fucking hate me. I hate myself. And I would always ask everyone if they were mad at me. That was like, I was that guy. I'm like, are you mad at me? I'm like, are you sure you're not mad at me? I thought everyone was mad at me. And then I was also like a vandal. I would get fucking crazy. I'd
really?
Break shit, steal shit. Yeah. I got really into like the parking garage arms, like those big things. I would always jump on those till they snapped.
Yeah. Would never pay
it was
you
wild.
For that.
No, yeah. Street signs. I was big into stealing street signs.
What, so like always, stop signs?
Yeah,
you
just
would
like
take
pull them up on the street or just like smash them. And then I would go into like bathrooms and just piss all over the bathroom. It's horrible. Piss all over the bathroom and like take toilet paper and like piss on that. I remember one time I was at this bar, Jillian's. It's like a big pool bar. like billiards bar in Boston, and I just took the mirror off the bath. I just like somehow just fucking ripped it off, and I took it and just smashed it on the sink. And like my uncle was with me. My uncle's like
my uncle.
He's the same age as me. That always sounds weird. He's
okay,
4 years older than me. I always forget. I tell all these stories about my uncle, and people are like, "Your uncle?
Yeah,
what the fuck?"
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, "No." He's like, I was 22. He was 26. But it's a fucked up family, but. Because people are always thinking like a six-year-old guy or something. But
that's what I was totally thinking, yeah.
So anyways, like I smashed it. He's like, it just exploded. Everyone was like, we got to go. It was my brother-in-law's bachelor party. I remember just coming out of the bathroom and be like, everybody go. We got to rush. And like everyone's like, what? Everyone had beers. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. And so I was like that guy. It was wild. And I would like jump on the hoods of cars and stuff and
just
steal mailboxes. And yeah,
parking lots? You'd run on the hoods
of cars? Yeah, like
car.
Parked cars would like run up and down cars and... It was insane. Like, obviously, like, there's, like, anger and...
aggression.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, stuff, like, unmet needs that I'm just coming out. Yeah. It's probably still all in there now, and I'm just, like... But, yeah, no, it was crazy. I was, like... You know, when you get sober, you try to make amends, and I'm like, there's so many amends I can't make.
You
like,
call
I don't
Jillian's
know
like, man, guys, listen.
Yeah.
I know I put 7 years of bad luck on y'all, but I apologize about that mirror, right, man. That's my bad.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many places, like, I don't even know where I was. Like, people just waking up with, and I feel horrible about people come out and their fucking mailbox is gone. They're like, what is this? And or, like, the antennas off cars, I would steal the, I mean, it was horrible. But, you know, fuck them.
I mean, we did some of that stuff when we weren't drinking in high school, you know. We would mailbox.
Yeah.
That was Stand By Me that introduced everybody to that. And then we're like, guess what we're going to be doing this weekend.
Right. But yeah, so it was like, I was an angry young man, I guess.
What's the, you have a story about, you have a blackout story you sent in I wanted to hear about here.
Yeah. So... I've told the story a few places. I think I told it on Rogan, so I feel bad if people already have heard this. But, yeah, so I was I had a serious girlfriend, and then we broke up, and that's when I was, like, at my worst because I was, like, in love with her, and she left me.
How old are you?
This was 08, 09, so I guess 27.
And you're in New York?
Yeah, this is in New York. And so then I was like, oh, my God, I'm never going to get another woman, blah, 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 whatever. And looking back, she was just really great at sex. I don't even think I liked her. She was just hot, which is a lot of, I think that's a lot of relationships.
Yeah, you I was going to say, like, I completely understand.
Yeah, you have like a hot woman or guy, whatever, that's like fucks really well, and then you break up and you're like, I loved her. And then years later, you're like, actually, I kind of hated her. Not that I hated her. I like her when we're friendly. Whatever, it doesn't matter. We were friendly before this podcast. But anyway, so I met this other girl that I liked. She worked at Caroline's Comedy Club in New York. And I started, like, talking to her. She was, like, the door girl, and I was talking to her. And I was like, we should all hang. And I set up, like, a group hang. So it's not, like, the pressure of, like, a date. And then I was drinking. I did this show called Bar 82, which was Sam Morril's show. And I was, like, doing shots there because it was free drinks. And I remember being on stage at, like, 8:30 p.m. being like, I'm hammered. Like, you know how you have that moment where you're like, whoa, I'm shit-faced.
It just hit you, yeah.
So then I went to Caroline's. I met up with a bunch of comics. Nate Bargatze, I'm sure you guys know, and... We started drinking there. Then we'd go to the shot bar called Barcelona Bar, which is still there, my favorite bar of all time. It was like a bar that's like specifies in shots, or specializes, I should say. And it's like they have movie-themed shots. Like there's a Full Metal Jacket, and they put it, you have an army helmet, and like, you fucking piece of shit, give me 20 or whatever. And there's like a Harry Potter and all this shit. So we were just getting banged up, and I was doing all these shots. And I knew I was like, I hadn't eaten, and I knew I was too drunk, but I wanted to show these girls how fun I was. And I had a flight the next day to Seattle. I was going to the Seattle Comedy Competition, which is a month long. I was leaving for a month the next day. I had like an 8 a.m. flight and just got blacked out drunk. I was hanging at this bar called 13th Step, ironically. And I was at the bar. My buddy was my best friend was a bartender there. So we were drinking for free. And I'm talking to the girl that I was like into. And I guess I don't remember this. I was in a blackout. I kept being like, you hate me. You fucking hate me.
And then who's telling you this after? The girl
this is like,
or your buddy?
My buddy the bartender. All right. And I got a few other buddies in the area too. And then she goes to the bathroom. He's like, dude, you got to stop saying that. He's like, she's into you. That's why she's here. She's like talking to you. You're a fucking idiot. You're blowing it. And then I guess as soon as she came back, I go, you love me. You fucking love me. And I just completely, same behavior, just changed the fucking verb or whatever. But anyways, and at one point, I disappeared for like 15, or like a half hour. Like I said goodbye to everybody, left. And this is like, I don't know what the hell happened this time. And I just reappeared. And I guess everyone was like, where did you go? You left. You said goodbye. And I was like, I know. Woo! And like I just kept going, like, so I have no idea that half hour.
Two more Harry Potters, goddammit.
That hour of my life or half hour is gone. Anyways, I have like in and outs of like being back on their couch. Like these girls like had me back at their place and we were drinking beers. And I remember throwing up and I woke up in the next morning. It was bright and I was in one of the girl that I liked, her roommate's bed. I just woke up. I was the only one in there. And I had to piss so bad. That's all I remember. I was like, I got to piss. I've never had to piss so bad in my life. And I was like, I got to find the bathroom. Because if I piss my pants, I'm going to be humiliated. And I went, found the restroom, urinated for like 9 minutes. And then like in the middle of it, I realized, I looked at the time and I'm like, I have a fucking flight in like 30 minutes.
Oh, holy shit.
So it's gone. Like there's no chance. No. And I'm like, I live near the airport, but not that close to the airport. And then I started to have this feeling of like, something went wrong last night. And I walked through the living room and the living room table was just like crushed. Like someone had Chris Farley at the table. Like it was just like perfectly broken in half, flattened out. And I always say this, I feel like, you ever have that feeling where you're like, that was me. I know that was me. Yeah. I don't remember what happened, but that's got my face. I did that. And then I realized nobody's in the apartment. And I was like, oh my God, I must have walked everybody. Like everyone must have left because I was losing my mind. And then I came back into the bedroom and there was a huge piss stain, like a huge puddle of, it was a fluid, but like that's got to be urine. And then there was a high top Nike sneaker with like a big shit sticking out of it. Like a spiky shit sticking
the
out of it.
The opposite of the shit you're having right now.
Yes, exactly. This was no oil. This was all substance.
Solid.
And then there was like, then I realized there was like pieces of shit
Jesus
around
Christ.
It. And then I realized, then I started like retrace my steps and there was like shit on like the kitchen floor, like footprint shit. Like I had walked through, like traipsed it through the house like a fucking dog. And right away I was like, I gotta kill myself. This is crazy. And so I took the shoe.
You remember none of that?
No, no, I remember none of it. And I think, like, I'm a wild animal, but I'm like, I think I must have just thought that was the toilet. Like, I had to shit, and I was like, this is, must be the bathroom. Because I don't imagine myself being like, this will be hilarious.
I'm also Woo. Impressed with the accuracy, though.
I nailed it.
I'm also like, impressed with the accuracy. In a blackout, you shit. And I mean, I'd be impressed if you hit a toilet.
Yeah, I don't know how I did it. If, like, someone held my hands and I leaned back or what. But I got it in there, and some of it was on the outsides and stuff. And then I took my sock off, and I picked up the shit with my, like, a sock as like a puppet.
Oh, God.
And I picked it up and then pulled it inside out, which is pretty quick thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like a shit in a sock, and I threw that in the trash. And then I remember trying to wipe up the kitchen. Now, I'm still drunk, basically. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm, like, trying to, like, scrub up as much of the shit as I can. But I also was like, I got to go get my shit and get to the airport. Get my stuff, I should say.
you got to leave your shit.
So I throw the shit in the toilet, and now I mean in the trash. And then I text these women. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I want to kill myself. I'm the worst person on earth. And then the woman texts, "Don't worry, you weren't that bad, and we had a fun time. Just whatever. It wasn't like bad." I was like, boy, these girls must fucking party. Like they were just like okay with it. And I was like, that's insane. So then I go get my luggage. I go to the airport. I missed my flight. I had to get the next flight, which was a flight to Boston, connects in Boston, then flies from Boston to Seattle. Now, on the flight, at one point I crossed my legs, and I realized I have shit all up
no,
my pant leg.
No.
I'm covered in shit.
Oh, no.
And
dude.
It's like on my actual leg and my pant leg. So I slowly, subtly put it back down. I'm just
put
like,
it
ooh.
Back down.
And then this is like a 3,000-mile flight, Boston to Seattle.
And you're just into it.
And I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, oh, God, I'm covered in shit. So I'm feeling
I'm
like...
covered in shit.
It's crazy. Like, I'm feeling like the worst shame, and I wanted to die.
Oh, God.
So then I land, and I turn my phone back on, and now it's like whatever time. It's like 5 p.m. West Coast time, so it's like 8 o'clock. So now I didn't realize this. I get the text from the girl, goes, oh my God, we had no idea how bad this was. What the fuck? And I was like, well, that's more like it. That feels like the response. And I was like, the whole time I was
that's
like, these
appropriate
girls are cool.
For taking a shit.
Yeah.
So by the way, you threw everything, but you didn't take that trash out. So
no.
They're coming home to that plus a sock full of shit in their trash can that wasn't. It was just the shoe before.
Yeah, and there's urine, and
God.
It's like this.
That's right,
like
a puddle of piss.
And so
the table's gone.
The craziest realization there is, this is what's so insane about it. They had left for work when this happened. So, like, I shit in a woman's shoe at, like, 9:30 a.m. Like, they had left for work. It didn't happen in the night. Like, I woke up.
Right, or they would have smelled it.
Yeah,
of course.
I mean, we were partying till like, 5 o'clock in the morning. So they must have, like, woke up, gone to work, and then I was the man of the house and just shit in a shoe like in the daytime, which makes it that much more depressing.
It really does. Yeah, I'm going to get with you on that morning sun still.
Yeah, it's like
coming up.
Sun's in my eyes and I'm taking a dump in a Nike.
Oh my God.
But I have the I have the message somewhere on Facebook. It's like so insane. And they actually were pretty cool because they were like 22. So I sent this long Facebook message being like, I'm the worst person. I've never drank. Like, this has never happened to me. And I sent them $300. And I remember calling Nate Bargatze and being like, is that too much? Is that weird? And he's like, I don't think there's an amount.
Yeah, right. There's not.
But they're going to be like, what? So I sent them $300, which was like a huge amount of my money at the time. I was broke. And I wrote a long apology. And again, the fact that they were 22 helped. I think if they were in their 30s, they would have fucking called the police.
Oh, my God.
And then I almost went on a date with the girl whose shoe it was.
After that?
Yeah, because I...
How in the hell did you even...
Well, I think I'm a nice guy. So I went. Eventually, I went back there and was like, hey. And like Nate kind of went and like... Nate was like my guardian. He like went and kind of talked to them beforehand. And I was like, I'm really sorry. And she's like, it's cool. Like, just whatever it happens. And I had tickets to go see a Letterman taping. And I was like, would you want to go with me to that? And she was like, sure. And then something ended up coming up. Like, she's like, what? Maybe her friend was like, you can't go on a date.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, she ended up canceling and it never worked out. But yeah, it was definitely like a low point. And then I continued to drink. Like, I should have quit. And I remember thinking that night when I got to Seattle, I remember thinking, well, I'm going to drink again eventually. So I might as well just drink tonight. And I ended up drinking that night. So that was like a bottom, and I just kind of hung out on the bottom. It was bad.
Jesus. When did you finally say, all right, enough's enough? What was there a moment? Did something happen, or did you just finally hit
realization,
I guess?
Later on the same year, like 6 months later, I got herpes on Christmas Eve. That's when I had my first outbreak. And it was quite
God.
A gift. And that was like another like, Jesus Christ, what is wrong with me?
What happened?
That one wasn't even like necessarily like booze induced. Like I was drinking when I got it, but like that one was like a girl I liked. She was cool and she was like, hey, I have herpes, but we were already like about to fuck. So I was like, whatever. I mean, she could have told me she had razor blades in her pussy.
But you went unprotected?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I was like, whatever. And then that's how you get herpes.
That's exactly how you get herpes.
If you're wondering how you get it.
When someone tells you I have it and then you don't use protection.
And I was like, okay.
That's how you get it easily.
Here's the thing. If you want to be a good person and tell people you have herpes but still want to get laid, if you're a woman particularly, or a gay man, like if you're about to fuck a man, you tell them right as you're naked, right before they enter. Because, I mean, like, once you've, like, decided, like, okay, I'm about to get laid. This is great. It's hard to be like, never mind. She could have been like, I have AIDS and I'm bleeding. I would have been like, whatever. I don't care.
I'll work around.
I'll figure that out. This medicine, whatever. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's hard to not. I was like.
Christmas Eve, huh?
Yeah. Well, that was earlier in the year. And then Christmas Eve is when I had the outbreak. And at first I thought like razor burn, like because she had a shaved vagina. I was like, maybe it's razor burn. But then you're like, well, that doesn't make sense because you're not rubbing your dick on her butt. Like, it's like there's no stubble inside of her vagina. And then it was like, it became clear because I was still drinking. So like my immune system was all out of whack. And it was just like, it just hit me. It was like 3 weeks of outbreak. It was horrible. And I still have it, but I don't have outbreaks almost ever anymore. But that was like another one of like, I gotta make better decisions. But then I kept drinking for like another year after that. And then when eventually I quit, it was like, again, I kept knowing I had to stop. And I like blacked out on family Christmas. I've been looking forward to Christmas. I was like, I'm gonna go home and it'll be great. And then like.
So does that mean you won? Did you win Christmas?
I think I kind of nailed it. Yeah. I mean, I broke all the gifts. That's a joke, but I remember getting there and just being like,
I'm sorry, is it the Christmas? Is this the same Christmas?
No, this is a different Christmas. Right, this is actually ended up being 2 years later. And I remember thinking, I got to quit. And I was so looking forward to Christmas. And then I was just like in a blackout. And all the gifts I got were booze, which is also a bad sign. Everyone's like, we got you whiskey too. And you're like, oh, jeez.
Like, God, everybody knows me so well.
And so I also was in a period where, like, I wouldn't drink, and people were like, you're not drinking. Why aren't you drinking? Like, you're like, oh, this is now my identity. And I also had the thing where, like, I talked to a friend of mine who was, like, in recovery, and he's like, see if you can have 6 drinks a night, which is a lot of drinks.
That is a lot.
He's like, keep it to 6. And I was like, no problem.
That's a good question. What were you, would you say you averaged a night if you're being asked to just do 6?
It depends. Like, I would, for a week, I would do just, I would do the max, do 6.
No, but I mean before that, when you're drinking, what would you say you would have a night?
It depends, but like, I would have, I remember one time
would
going to the
double
doctor.
Digits?
Yeah, you usually would. Double digits, because I would drink all night, or like shots and beers. Captain and Coke was like my main drink. And I remember one time feeling like I had an arrhythmia, like my heart was racing all the time. So I went to the doctor and he's like, do you drink? And I was like, yeah. He's like, what do you drink? I was like, Captain and Coke. And he's like, how many do you have in a night? And I was like, I don't know, 12, 15. And he thought I was like kidding. And he's like, yeah, dude. He's like, the Coke alone is going to kill you. Like, that's crazy. He's like, even if there was no rum, that's insane. And I was like, oh, all right. And like, it's just like, fuck, yeah, I guess, but it's delicious, you know? And so when I would go hard, but like even the nights I would say I wasn't drinking, I would have 4 or 5 beers and 2 or 3 shots. That was like a night off to me. I'd be like, I didn't
really
drink last night. Yeah.
I didn't drink last night.
Yeah, I'd be like, I had a couple shots and a few beers. So I don't know. Sometimes 10, and then it depends, like when I would be like in Maine with my family on vacation, we'd start drinking at noon. I would drink for 11 hours. So you'd drink like a bottle of rum or whatever, and it was bad. But luck, I mean, at the time I was in my 20s. So like when you're in your 20s, you can drink like that. And the next day I would like run. I'd play basketball. I'd feel like shit, but like you could kind of get away with it. And then I hit 30 and my hangover started to like really fuck me up. And yeah, it was Christmas of 2012. I'm coming up in 7 years, almost exactly. Well, it's past now that when people are hearing it, but as we record. And it was like Christmas. I remember like blacking out, and my brother-in-law, his father had just died. And I made like a joke about it. I was like, yeah, because you're fucking dead dad, or like something. And I remember seeing his face, and he was like, what are you doing? And I remember like that was like a big moment of like, oh man, I'm like, I'm not funny. I'm just an asshole. Because I thought I was like, yeah, you know, dead dad jokes. And his dad had died like 3 days earlier. And I just remember like,
oh,
I just remember him being like, dude, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Fuck. Sorry. I thought. And then just having that like shame. There was so much shame. And I hated myself. I mean, I fucking hated myself. And then I remember going home the next day. I was doing a show back in New York. And I was like, I got to take a break. I got to not drink. And then, of course, like got shithoused to like 4 a.m. And that's when I felt like I can't stop. I'm like trying to and I can't.
And at this point, other than, I mean, it's taken a toll in a lot of ways. Are you feeling anything physically at this point or no?
I'm
still
like
young
shit.
Enough.
Yeah, I felt like shit all the time. And I also realized I felt kind of like foggy all the time, where I always describe it as like when I turned my head, it felt like it took a moment for everything to catch up. Like I felt like just a fog, just a general like, like my reactions were like slower. I felt like just a fuck up. It's like, whoa, what? And I realized I was like hungover or drunk or drinking almost all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All of the time. I was one of those three things. And then I went and did Helium in Philadelphia with Gary Gulman. I was opening for him. That's another bad sign. I was fucking 14 years into comedy and featuring everywhere and had no money. But I was featured for him and we started talking about, I was like, I got to stop drinking. And then he gave me one of those alcoholic tests. You might be an alcoholic, which is like a running joke in sobriety circles. Like if someone's giving you that test, you've just fucking, you know, you're an alcoholic. No one, normal people don't just be like, let me see if I'm an alcoholic. So I ended up, there's like 25 questions and I
is
answered,
number one, if you're taking this test, because it really should
it
be.
It should be like, it's like, yeah, be. Did somebody say, let me read these questions to you?
Was this sent to you?
But it was like 25 questions and I answered like 23 of them. Yes. And it was like, if you answered 10 or more, you might be an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, I like nailed. And the two that I said no
nailed
to.
Nailed
like,
it.
The two that I said no to were like kind of like asterisks where it was like, have you ever been hospitalized for drinking? And I'm like, no. But I'm like, I have like shat blood before. And some of you are like, I should have gone to the hospital. Or like, have you been arrested? And I'm like, no. But I'm like, I've driven drunk a million times. I just got lucky. So whatever it was that weekend. And it kind of like hit me like, yes, I need to, like, I'll be a sober guy. Like, I felt this like different feeling of like, this is what I'm going to do. And like, I started like counting days and I made a list because I was very like, successful is a weird word. I was like popular in high school. I didn't drink in high school, but I was like a good athlete and I was popular. Like people, I was a popular guy and I had a great time. Like I was succeeding. So I was like, I've lived soberly before. It's not like I was started drinking when I was 10. Like, I exceeded at life while not drinking. So I'm like, I can do this again. And then I had all my wife, my girlfriend then, was sober. We dated for about a year and a half while I was still drinking, but she was sober, so like in recovery. And so I was close to that through her. And I had really close friends that were sober in recovery. And so I started talking to them immediately. And then I was like, okay, this is going to be my new life. And then you have like what alcoholics call like a pink cloud where like, early on, I was like, everything makes sense. Like, everything was like, I'm going to go to a museum and look at the museum. Like, it's like, I'm going to watch sports again. I'm going to really get. Like,
that's called a pink cloud.
Yeah, where you're like, everything's like, fucking woo, amazing. And then, like, after a few months, it starts to wear, and then you're like, oh, you're back to all these same problems you had before. But there's a moment of like, just complete clarity of like, this makes sense. Everything is new again. It feels like a sequel to life, which I still feel that way now, but you got to like tap into it because problems start to come back. But yeah, so it was like that weekend. And I remember there was another great moment with Gary Gulman, who's not sober, but he doesn't really drink. He's not a drinker. And I was talking to him and I was like, okay, he was like convincing me to not drink. And I was like, but what about when I'm at a party and you just hate everybody there? And you go, you got to like, what am I supposed to do then? And he's like, you go home. And it was like an epiphany. Like it blew my mind. I was like, right. Oh, that never occurred to me.
That I
in my whole life. I was like, oh, you're saying don't spend time with people you dislike. And it really, like, even like now, I was like, wow, yeah, maybe I'll not hang out with people I fucking hate. And I still now, like, it's 7 years later, I still now, like, do my show and I'm like, okay, good night, everybody. I'm going to go home. And then it's like, I always had this pressure to be like, we got to live, man. You got to, like, get drunk and be like, everything's romanticized, like Tom Waits and all these movies like romanticizes this idea of being like, we're fucking pirates, ah! And then you're like, oh no, I'm just a fuck up, I'm just a fucking idiot. So yeah, that was basically that,
man. I that's an interesting term, that pink cloud. I love the everything's all rainbows and then you're right back to I think a lot of people also just in life are, you know, you ever meet those people that are in love with love, or, you know, everything's always greener. Let me get the new job. I once read a quote, it was just recently, where it said, if you're always looking for the next best, you know, job, friend, car, you know, partner, whatever it is, then you're never going to be happy where you are.
Right.
You're never going to be complacent right here and enjoy this moment, because it's always like, well, that will be a better job. That will be a better person, business partner, love partner, whatever it is.
Right.
And I think that's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm still trying to figure out now, is that thing of like finding some contentment. I think I'm doubling down on contentment. I think that's a word.
I'm going to go like, with it. It feels right.
Yeah, it feels like something. That? Or that the idea of like, I've always had this idea, and through therapy and sobriety, I'm realizing now of like that life was something that was like in the distance of like, when I start really living, when I get this apartment, and you're like, oh, it's happening now. It's already been happening. And so I'm figuring that out now through meditation and Wim Hof breathing that I've been doing for 2 days.
I'm going to check that Wim Hof out.
It's something. And so, yeah, it's still a struggle to kind of navigate everything without losing my mind. But yeah, I'm better now than I've been. Although I am shitting oil.
So, how old are you?
37.
All right, 37. So I've got almost 10 years on you. And I can tell you what happened to me was, it's, you said it earlier, you said it's probably still in there. And what I didn't realize is how much of it is still in there. And I had a just, and I've said this on here before, but the thing that got me into the whole thing was my daughter. It was a little too close for comfort when she almost got hit by a car.
Right.
And that all that did was, it was like, and here it all comes, you know, and it's just started like all of a sudden I started worrying about flying,
right,
and having a fear of heights. I'm like, what the fuck are these new fears? This, is it part of aging? No, it's not part of aging. It's part of understanding and getting to realize that all this shit you've had pent up, something out of your control just popped it open.
Right.
So it's there.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it's like, strangely, like evolutionary, where I start being like, yes, oh my God, I'm panicking. There's something wrong with me. But even that muscle is from being a caveman and being like, there's a fucking saber-toothed tiger over there. We better get ready to run. Your heart's like, let's get some blood pumping.
Yeah, what is this liquid falling from the sky and everything?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it is like in you. And like that's what I'm trying to be like mindful of like, okay, that's anxiety. That's a reaction to this. And a big thing that's really helped me is like my new mantra that I got from my therapist is fear is just fear and my thoughts are not reality. I try to like repeat that over and over again.
Man, that's great.
Yeah, because you start believing like what's going on. Like earlier I was like, I keep going back to this oily shit, but I was like, I'm dying, something's wrong. And I like Google it and I'm like, okay, this is something that happens from eating the thing that I've been eating a ton of and it should go away. Let me try to relax.
The therapist I went to see, she called it future tripping. And I just love that term.
Yeah.
You know, you're always worrying about what's going to happen from this, and I might have this going on, and da 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 da, what I'm going to say in this situation, everything, and none of it's even real.
Yeah. And
just your thoughts running away from you.
There's a Tom Petty lyric, sure as night follows day, most things I worry about never happen anyway.
It's true.
Of course, he died.
He died.
So
I'm pretty sure he was worried about
that. Yeah, he was worried about that.
That one's going to happen to all of us.
But yeah, we will die for sure. We're going to die, but not today, probably.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea. I have to drive.
And then, you know, the stories continue, not just in personal life, even into your career. So you have a last comic story that I'd love to hear about, but I want to ask you, how long into stand-up are you when you get on Last Comic?
So that story took place right in the middle of all of the, I tried to do a one-man story for a while. I mean, a one-man show about this. So this is all 2010 was when my girlfriend that I lived with and loved left me. I mean, that sounds so dramatic. We broke up, whatever. Left me makes it sound like we were in our 50s and whatever. But we broke up, and so that was like devastating. And I started drinking heavy. And then shortly after that, it was like March of 2010. So I was about 10 years into comedy, or maybe 9.5 years into comedy. I did Last Comic Standing, which was the season that Felipe Esparza won, and Tommy John again, Mike Kaplan. And so this is like a sad story, but funny. So she had just left and I couldn't get over it. I was like, I don't even care about comedy. I wanted her. I was in love with her. I thought that was going to be my life. And then she broke up. And then Last Comic Standing came to town. It was the year Geraldo was a judge. And I went and did the show. And like I passed on to the next round. Like you did the daytime. The first round was like in front of Kindler.
At like the Hollywood Improv with no one else there. Or
Gotham,
something.
Yeah. It was just like the three
Gotham,
of them.
Right.
It was Kindler and Natasha Leggero and Geraldo. So you just auditioned for them, which is so weird. And that they laughed, they liked it. And then you come back that night to do an actual show at Gotham. And I killed. And then I was the last one they call. Because they go like, they give you a red ticket that's just an envelope. And they're like, here's your ticket to Hollywood, you know. And then they were like, there's one more comic advance. They had announced 9 or whatever. And they're like, the final comic. And it was like this big moment. They're like, is Joe List? And I waved into the camera and said, I miss you, Becca. I thought this was going to be on TV.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's going to see this. It's going to be amazing. And I got my dumb red ticket. I really thought like, somehow I thought that was going to air. I'm a fucking idiot.
They're going to air that.
Yeah. So then like, I remember thinking like, sitting on the subway being like, I don't need her. Like, that's a girl. Like, I'm a comedian. And it was like this moment of like, I'm fucking back, baby. I'm in showbiz. And I was like, that's what I really want. And then I went to L.A. here. Well, Glendale. It's like so funny how many things in the industry. You're like, here's your ticket. It's just a red envelope. And they're like, you're going to Hollywood. And I'm in Glendale.
I'm not sure this is all bullshit.
None of this is real.
It's all bullshit.
So then I went to that round, and then I won that round, and like went to like the semifinals or whatever.
So at this point, you've performed for the judges and then two actual shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm
And how much time are you doing? Like three
I
to
think
five?
All like 3 minutes yeah. or 4 minutes. Yeah. So I'm like feeling great. And so I'm like, I remember I have an email because I was still talking to my ex-girlfriend. She moved to Argentina. She went to like teach underprivileged kids or some horseshit. And she's a great person. So like I emailed her and being like, and I have the email. It's so embarrassing. I was like, I'm going to be a minor celebrity. Like I was like, because that's NBC. I'm like, I'm making it. Like, this is crazy. And I'm like, she's probably down there jealous. Meanwhile, she doesn't give a shit about me. And then the show aired and I told her how to stream it. I was like, you can stream it. It's on tonight. And I'm telling everybody it's on Facebook. And then they don't tell you if you're edited out. I never even knew that was an option. So I just watched the whole show, and like you can kind of see my arm where I'm like, I was like, wait a minute. And I didn't know that was even possible to just, meanwhile, they make Star Wars. They're like in space. So I'm like, of course it's possible. They can make anything. And so they just edited me completely out without saying
like
anything.
Not even like a quick shot in B-roll or anything
no.
showing the comics on stage that night.
No.
And you did two shows.
Yeah. And there's not a second of me in there. And then they're like, and the final comedian moving on. Like, they show that, but it's just a different person. Like, they just plugged in a different person.
Nah.
And I was like, what?
So, wait, you were selected the top 10, and then they just replaced you without even telling you that part?
Yeah. So, what happened the season before that, evidently, was they said people are moving on. Like, they're like, you made it to the semifinals, and then afterwards amended it, and they didn't send them to L.A., which was, of course, like, heartbreaking for that person. So, this time they said, that won't happen again. If you get told you're going to L.A., you're going to L.A., but they might edit you out. They didn't mention that part. So they still
but
managed
it might
to, like,
never
devastate us. Yeah. And so then immediately I'm getting all these texts and emails being like, hey, were you just kidding? I didn't see you at all. And I was like, fuck. And so I got completely edited out. Nobody ever said, like, oh, we're sorry. Yeah, we had whatever. So that was devastating. And that's when, so at that same time, then my ex-girlfriend was like inviting me to come meet up with her in Peru. She's like, you know what, I feel like we've matured, why don't you come down and hang out with me? And so then I had like the opposite. I was like, who needs comedy? I'm getting the girl back.
Comedy's
bullshit anyways. Fuck this business. I'm gonna get, that's what I really wanted anyways. And then I go down there and we hung out, we had a great time, but I was like, so we're getting back to, I tried to like hook up. She's like, no, you fucking idiot, I just wanted to be friends or whatever. And so that was devastating. And then
Man,
I came back
keeps
from that
coming, dude.
Yeah, so I lost the girl, then got Last Comic Standing, then lost Last Comic Standing, then thought I was getting the girl back, but lost the girl again. And then the end of the year, I ended up with like a horrific herpes outbreak. So
that was all
2010, yeah.
Holy shit.
And then drank for like another couple of years. But then I got sober and now I'm successful.
All right, so what was it when you finally stopped? What was it, AA? Like, what was it that really helped and continued to help?
Yeah, that was, I got into like the program, started going to meetings and stuff, which I hate talking too much about because people take that shit seriously, talking about it too much. But yeah, I go there, it helps me. I like it, I love it. And like I said, my wife is sober and I had sober friends and it just started, everything just kind of worked better for me.
Can I ask you, when you say my wife's sober, does that mean she is also?
She's also in recovery,
okay.
Yeah. So she's got about 2 years on me or so, 2.5 years. Because I think she just celebrated 10 years and I'm about to celebrate 7 years. So
have you ever dated a person that just didn't drink like that, could literally have like half a beer or a beer? And
yeah, a couple. Yeah, like my previous girlfriend was like that.
Yeah.
I always thought that was
fascinating.
And
that didn't help you?
No.
No.
No. Oh, well, maybe a little bit. Like, I wouldn't drink as much, but then when we weren't around, I would just go back to it, whatever. That's always fascinated me. People that, like, would just leave a beer behind. Like, they'd go to the bathroom, and then they would come back and be like, they forgot they had a drink. Or they'll leave, like, half a beer full. I still am like, can you drink that? Because that's crazy to me. Like, it's strange to me to be like, oh, I had a drink earlier, but I don't even know where it is. I'm like, I've never lost a drink. I know where your drink is. I've never lost a drink in my life. I'm like, that's crazy. But, so I got, like, also, like I said, like, things just started working. Like, I got sober, and then I got into this Comedy Cellar. Because I was like, if I'm going to get sober, let me try to, which I had previously been in and fell out there, but that's a whole other story.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, so when I first moved to New York, I was opening for Nick DiPaolo a bunch. We were buddies, and we're still buddies. But I was opening for him, and then he recommended me at the Comedy Cellar, which is a really tough club to get into, especially back then. Not as tough now, but I digress. But he had never recommended anybody before. And so I ended up getting past there like immediately. I auditioned, passed, and I did one spot. I followed Sherrod Small, who's like a tough follow. He just kills. And then I was so nervous. I was like shaking and like, whoa. And I just fucking ate it. And then the booker was like, how'd it go? And I was like, oh, not good. And then I just never got booked again. I put in avails for like 2 years. And I was like, eh, I guess I'm out there. So I had to re-audition when I got sober. But I was like, if I'm getting sober, I gotta go for it. Like, what's the point of getting sober? So I auditioned there and got back in there. And I was like, okay, now I'm in at the Cellar. And then I started a podcast, which is still going, Tuesdays with Stories. And like that started to do well. And then I decided like, oh, I should try to get a late night. Because for years, when you're drinking, this is like the kind of attitude you have is like, I don't get anything. I've never gotten anything. No one gives me anything. Meanwhile, I'm like literally not even trying to get a late night. I'm like just waiting for someone to call me and be like, do you want to just come do Letterman? Even though there's no, right, I've never auditioned. Right. And so then like once you get sober, you're sort of more pragmatic and understanding. I'm like, let me try to get that. And I eventually did. It took time to get it, but I eventually did. And then you start having this thing of like, oh, I could be successful. I could be healthy. I could get back into shape. I could fucking... And so sobriety was just working for me. My relationships were better. And then you start having this thing of like, well, I don't want to go back to that.
Right.
And especially when you start accumulating time, you're like, God, that would suck to go all the way back to that beginning. So it's just worked for me. Like all the success I've had in comedy has come in sobriety. I mean, literally all of it. So yeah, it's working.
How long have you been sober?
Just about seven, almost exactly 7 years. The 28th
That's great.
8th of December will be 7 years.
And at any moment, do you ever think about going back? Do you ever? Are you ever tested or challenged?
Or is that an
everyday thing?
A little bit. Like it's there's a thing that really helps is like a saying like think about your last drunk, not the first drink.
Oh, okay.
So like to think about a beer sounds great. The idea of like, especially in like LA, it's sunny, sitting outside with like an IPA sounds nice.
But think
like,
about I shitting know in where a it goes. Shoe.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like that feeling of like, what? Fuck you guys. Like, you know what I mean? So to, like I said, to think about a drink sounds great, but I know where it would lead. And there's times like with family, on vacation with families are tough because they all drink. And that's when I felt more connected to them. Because like, you do feel a connection when you're drinking with someone. Because you're like, yeah, let's get another one. It's easier to make relationships, but it's harder to sustain relationships. So never, it's never like a practical. I look at it very similarly to cheating on my wife. Where you're like, yeah, like I would love to have sex with that woman. But then like, it would just be shame. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to face my wife. I want to kill myself.
Ruins everything.
Yeah. So it's like, well, I'll just not do that. And so I masturbate thinking about beer. I'm like, oh, fucking Captain and Coke. It's like, hey, that could be a bit, maybe. But no, it's like you try to, which I'm trying to figure out with food, because like I was talking, I keep going back to it. Like I have this problem with diet.
Me too.
Where it's like, I want a waffle with fucking butter and syrup, and then you eat it, and then like the next day you're like, I'm gonna do that again, and then it's like, fuck, I feel like shit. I'm shitting. Yep. I got an oil spill in my toilet. But yeah, so it's again, it's all managing that stuff. But that's what's harder about quitting food or whatever, because there's no real immediate result. Like if I drank, I'd be fucking shitting in the floor.
Good point. Right.
But if you eat a chicken parm or whatever, you're not like dying. You're just like, it's not the best thing for me.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I feel pretty good now.
Well, that's great, man.
In this moment.
All right, I've been closing out the shows with advice you would give to your 16-year-old self.
Okay.
Dear 16-year-old me, what would you like to say to your 16-year-old self?
Okay, what I would like to say to my 16-year-old self is wear a condom. Go with it. Condoms are good. They're fun. No, I don't. It's hard because like I felt like I wouldn't listen to myself. Even if I went back there and was like, dude, I'm covered in herpes. Listen to me.
Look at me right now. This is you.
Like 16-year-old me would have been like, shut up, you fucking nerd.
That's the best part about this whole thing is that somewhere in our life, we probably got some of that advice. And just like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like everything. There's a movie called When Stand-Up Stood Out about the Boston comedy scene in the 80s. And, like, they showed it to us. It's all about these guys that kind of fucked up. They did too much blow and booze, and they ruined their career. Not ruined, but fucked up their career. And we all watched it, you know, all these Boston comics. And then we were like, ah, that's great. Woo! Like, we just did
it. Yeah, right.
But anyways, I would invite, like, it's you're going to be fine. It's not nothing is as bad as you think it is. Just fucking relax, and it's going to be okay. You're not dying, and you'll know when you're actually dying, I think, I hope. I would just try to say, take it easy and enjoy it, because it's fun, and you're going to be fine.
Awesome. One more time, please, again, plug everything. New podcast, everything. I know I got you doing it again.
That's all right. It's Tuesdays with Stories with Mark Normand every week, comedy podcast, and then I have a brand new podcast called Mindful Metal Jacket. And it's more serious. And then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Joe List Comedy. And then comedianjoelist.com has all my dates and stuff.
All right. This was great, dude. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I do appreciate you.
I appreciate it.
As always, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to you all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.